Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, heterosexual, anti-choice talk show host. Hey, just back from a seminar in Indiana. We've got so many emails here at kgovlive@aol.com. To those of you who are listening in Rochester, New York, Springfield, Mass., South Bend, Indiana, in Denver, hey, we had such an enjoyable time in Indianapolis, and it was neat to see. We had people from six or seven states drive in from Syracuse, New York, and Virginia. Where else we have? Wisconsin, Ohio, Illinois, Colorado. We just had a great time. There were well over 100 people in attendance. We've got a bunch of emails maybe later in the show we'll get to. And so the topic was, does God exist? And we looked at that from a number of angles, including philosophy, psychology, science. We looked at archaeological and historical evidence, biblical evidence. But last week, our studio here ended up talking to someone by chance, to someone from Colorado who is a retired scientist, and his name is Frank. And the conversation, just by chance, went to the issue of the age of the Earth. How old is the Earth? And so we thought it'd be fun to call Frank, and we actually have him on the line. Hey, Frank, welcome to Bob Enyart Live. Hey, Frank, how are you?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you, Frank?
Good, thanks.
Hey, thank you for being willing to join us on the air like this. Frank, at the seminar that we just did, we had about 100 and some people there. And when we talked about the Earth, I gave arguments to the effect that the Earth is young, that the Earth and the solar system are not billions of years old.
Earth was created in six 24-hour days?
Well, let's specifically stick to the point of that the Earth is young, that it's not billions of years old.
Uh-huh.
It's not even millions of years old, but that it's thousands of years old.
Yeah, okay, like 6, 10, 20,000. Huh?
Yeah, and I wondered if maybe I could just sort of in a rush give you just a few bullets of different arguments that I would use and then ask you if you could process them, think through them, or respond to them.
Do I get it? Can I have a few minutes to present the scientific side of it?
Yeah, the argument that it's billions of years old?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, the evidence that I'll be giving comes from scientists also. Mm-hmm. But sure, which way should we do it? How about we, since I have my bullets, I'll give maybe just five bullets.
Okay.
I've got five bullets to start with right here. I'll run them off, and then if you could respond to them, and then we'll listen to the traditional evidence.
What I would kind of like to do is maybe have 5 minutes to just run through what astrophysicists.
Yeah.
I was a research scientist in geophysics.
Okay.
I worked on the seismic side of it. I wasn't a hardened core geologist who really knows his stuff about all the sedimentation and all that kind of stuff.
All
but
right.
I would present it more from what astrophysics is finding that confirms the Bible, all except for the fact the word day.
Okay. All right. Well, is it okay, Frank? Let me get started since I'm the amateur and you're the professional.
Yeah. Well, I'm 6'7". I've had my leg pulled before, so don't pull it too hard.
Okay. All right. All right.
It's all enough.
Okay. Well, here's some of my evidence that leads me to believe the Earth is young. If the Earth were billions of years old, we should expect to see certain things in the Earth. For example, since the Earth was originally molten, we're told, and has gradually cooled for a billion years and is still cooling,
mm-hmm.
we should expect to see billions of years worth of here's my first bullet. Billions of years worth of lava flows from volcanoes such that virtually the entire crust of the Earth would be covered with lava, but in reality, there's about 4 to 5 billion years of missing lava on the surface of the Earth.
Can I restop onto these bullets as you do them? Because I'm afraid I'm going to forget.
I'll repeat. Let me repeat all five
all right.
quick, and then we'll go back one by one.
Okay.
The second bullet is that with the meteorites landing on the surface of the Earth and the meteoritic dust, if the entire solar system was formed in some dramatic event, and gradually through billions of years the planets formed the sun and the solar system's been calming down, you'd think there were more meteorites early in Earth's history and there'd be fewer as the solar system sort of cleans itself out. But the amount of nickel that we find in meteorites, meteorites have a high nickel content.
I own three of them.
Okay, and there's about 5 billion years of missing nickel on the surface of the Earth if the Earth is 5 billion years old. My third bullet is that if the Earth is billions of years old, there's billions of years of missing sediments on the floor of the oceans. The ocean floors, on average, have basically a small amount of sediment. They don't have billions of years. They don't have millions of years of sediment on the floors of the ocean. It's a pretty minimal amount.
So far, I think I've got answers to all of those.
That's three.
On the geologic side, yeah.
All right, that's three. Well, I'm just the pastor of Denver Bible Church.
Sure,
The fourth is that there are billions of years of missing minerals dissolved in the ocean, like if copper, the rains in the rivers wash copper into the oceans, and we can measure the amount of copper parts per billion in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And there are literally billions of years of missing minerals, of many different minerals in the ocean, dissolved in ocean waters. And let me skip the missing river deltas. There's only thousands of years worth of river deltas to go to the gradual weakening. This is my fifth one.
Mm-hmm.
The gradual weakening of the Earth's magnetic field cannot account for billions of years of past history.
The weakening of which field?
The Earth's magnetic field. Since we've been measuring it for a couple hundred years, we've seen a gradual weakening.
Oh, well, it's reversed.
Dozens,
if not hundreds of times its life. Uh-huh.
Right. We know that the magnetic field has reversed.
It keeps changing, yeah.
Yeah, it can reverse. You know, the polarization of a magnet can flip under certain circumstances, but it's not going to get stronger unless it gets recharged somehow.
For instance, on that point there, they've drilled core holes down, you know, like 2 and 3 miles down. And when you have rocks that are when they become molten, their crystalline structure aligns with what the magnetic field is at that time.
Right.
And they've seen I don't know exactly, but I think they've seen maybe 50 or 100 changes.
Reversals, Frank. We have to take a commercial break. We'll be right back. But I wasn't talking about reversals, but a weakening of the field. Welcome back. Welcome to a commercial break. It's a live commercial break, and Bob and Yurt Live is listener-supported radio. And we had such a great turnout in Indianapolis. I want to thank everyone in Indy who made the seminar possible, especially WNTS and Jim Wilson, the manager of that Christian radio station, and Philip Duplessis, the pastor from South Africa, the pastor of Grace Church in Indianapolis, and his family, the organizers, David and Lisa King. What a great time we had, and presenting people with evidence, hard evidence from science, history, the Bible, philosophy, psychology, hard evidence for the existence of God. But we can't do this on our own, and if you'd like to help, well, then we'd be thrilled for you to call up our order line, 1-888-8-NYART, and you could order some of our videos, Get Out of the Matrix, Confronting an Atheist, Genesis Creation. You could order some of our audio tapes or our literature. Call us up and talk about what might interest you. And then, of course, when you purchase those, that helps us stay on the air. And if you don't like what you get, if you don't love it, if you don't enjoy it, then just call us up or send it back and we'll give you a money-back guarantee. Money-back guarantee on everything if you're not satisfied. So, let's see here. Our number, 1-888 1-866-936-9278. That's 1-888-8-NYART. Right now, Bob and Yart Live is airing in 5 cities and on the web, on a handful of different outlets on the web. If we're not in a city in your area, we're working on it, all right? We'll be right back. Now, for those listening just via the internet, this next message is just for you guys. Hey, I've been out of town for a few days going to Indianapolis, but thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you for your response to our need, our once-a-year internet hosting bill. We host our main site, kgov.com, and our other sites via like denverbiblechurch.org. We host them at Interland. Interland is the largest hosting site for Windows NT and Windows 2000 servers. And that's what we use, Windows 2000 server. And our bill, once a year, just for the basic service, the bandwidth for all the thousands of different people that tune in each week to get a show. All right, we're back. Bob and Yart Live, 1-800-8-NYART. And you could try calling in. The lines are pretty full, but we've got instant messages here. Somebody said, hey, Alabama was at the seminar too. Good point, Alabama. And somebody else wants Frank and I to talk about Polonium 218. And somebody else says, Bob, we hope Frank is not in his bathrobe. That's a reference to the physical anthropologist Eugenie Scott, who joined me for a one-hour debate on the show, and we decided, how do you know who wins a debate? Well, the answer is whoever sells the tape recording, whoever sells the record of the debate, that's the one who won it, and the person who doesn't sell it lost it. And Eugenie Scott, a well-known, nationally known evolutionist, she fights against creationism. That's her profession. At the end of the one-hour debate, she said, well, I don't debate, and I'm just here petting my cat. And so I was, okay, Eugenie, let's go to Frank. Frank, I laid out 5 bullets.
Okay.
And why don't we go ahead and address them?
Bob, could I have maybe 7 minutes,
yeah,
6 or 7 minutes,
you can,
to just very quickly lay out what astrophysics and science thinks.
All right.
This has happened, and
why don't you do that?
I will lead those up to your 5 points.
Why don't you do that?
I'll chime in.
All right, we got the clock going here.
Okay. 14-15 billion years ago, there was a tremendous explosion. It had 10 billion times more energy than there is equivalent mass in the universe today, and in the first 4 seconds, it was all hydrogen. After 4 seconds, helium started to form, and as that helium expanded and clumped, it formed stars. Our star is helium and hydrogen primarily, and once you get enough mass, what happens is it starts to fusion, where the energy converts the hydrogen and helium into iron and nickel and oxygen and everything that we are. And so once that star has gone through its total phase of fusion, why, it burns out. And what's left over is everything that the Earth is made out of. So what you and I and the Earth and everything are made out of are the ashes of burnt out stars. And so our solar system is one of the ones that formed later, quite a few billion years ago, maybe 6 billion years ago, 7 billion years ago, something like that.
So this is by your theory, the theory of others.
This is what science is finding with
this is
by making measurements with telescopes and things like
this
that.
This is the telescopes don't show them that explosion. So this is their theory.
They can get 90% of the way back to the Big Bang in light.
Well,
the reason that they can do that is because the Earth is expanding away from that at about 90% the speed of light.
Frank, if if they could get 90% of the way back to the Big Bang, remember when NASA focused the Hubble telescope for a long period of time on a tiny little speck?
Now this is on your
all right. This is all right. You went a minute and a half. You got
okay.
another
okay, got
five and a half minutes.
Yeah, okay.
NASA focused the Hubble telescope on a tiny little speck of black space for a long time so that it could develop a large photo of what that little speck, what they'd be peering at the edge of the universe. And they did quite a lot of fanfare and press releases telling us when we'd all get to see that picture. And they said it would be the picture of galaxies as they were first forming at the edge of the universe.
At that time, the edge was much smaller, yes, and that edge is the edge of time also.
Yeah, this was about maybe 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And you could go to NASA's website, nasa.gov, and look at the picture they released.
Mm-hmm.
And before they released the picture, and they were saying, we are going to see what galaxies look like when they were first formed.
Yep.
Before they released the picture, I, as a talk show host, along with other conservative talk show hosts and scientists who are creationists, young Earth creationists, we made a prediction that NASA was completely wrong in all the many galaxies that may appear on that photo, and there were many.
Yeah.
They would all look just like all the other galaxies we see everywhere in the sky we look. And guess who was right? Was it NASA or the Christians? Which prediction turned out to be true?
Well, I must.
Could you answer that question and then go for your five and a half minutes?
I haven't seen the pictures.
This was big. This was big only 3 years ago. If you don't know, I'll answer it for you. Well, let me ask you this. Do you think when they developed the Hubble photograph that they saw galaxies that were just forming? Or do you think they saw many galaxies that looked just like all the others? Your guess?
If they were looking based on the red shift, if they were looking...
No, they were looking as far away as they could possibly look, based on the speed of light. And
if that's the case, then they were looking maybe 10, 12 million light years away. And what they were seeing was what the universe was like 10, 12 million.
Well, that's not what they said. What they said was that they were peering many billions of years away to the edge, to the beginnings of the galaxies. That's what they said. And let me ask you this. Whose prediction do you think would turn out to be true, NASA's or the pastor of Denver Bible Church?
Well,
just take a guess, a wild guess.
The wild guess is that a lot of things – have a lot of variables in it.
Oh, I know that, but that's not. Hey, Frank.
You can pick and choose.
Hey, Frank,
if
you would like to continue for your five and a half minutes, let's show the audience that you are intellectually honest and you have the courage to answer a direct question.
Would you
guess that NASA's prediction of that Hubble photo or the pastor at Denver Bible Church?
What were the two predictions?
Okay, Bob, NASA said that when the whole world saw the photo, which we could both, you and I could go to on the web now.
Okay.
I've looked at it recently, a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at it then a few years ago. They said that when that photo finally came in, we would see galaxies in their early stages of formation because they were peering back to the edge of the universe.
Okay. They were saying that, and what were you saying?
And I was saying we wouldn't see anything like that. We would see only galaxies fully formed like we see everywhere in the night sky, everywhere we look.
Oh, galaxies have been forming in the same way for billions of years.
Yeah, they said we were looking at the beginning of the forming of the galaxies. That's what NASA said.
Yeah, but
if they said that, okay, you don't trust me maybe.
I just don't know.
If NASA were to say that their photo would show the galaxies when they were first forming, if they were to say that, if they did in fact 3 years ago say that, and if the pastor of Denver Bible Church said, no, we're going to see galaxies fully formed like we see everywhere, who would you guess would be right in the prediction?
I would guess that what they would see back then, Bob, is as the helium and hydrogen...
No, you're not answering the question, Frank. Hey, Frank, I'm going to put you on hold, and we might... I want to give you the 5.5 minutes that you have coming. But do you have the intellectual discipline to answer the question? If you don't, Frank, just say, I don't want to answer the question, or say, I think it's an unfair question. But if you have the discipline, answer the question and then make an argument or a further observation. Okay, I'm bringing you back. Frank, whose prediction do you think would come true?
Well, I would think NASA's would.
Okay, let me tell you that mine came true because the photo they released, they were dismayed, they were disappointed that all the galaxies looked just like all the other galaxies we see in every photograph of galaxies.
But you know why that would be?
Yeah, I do know why, because their assumption is incorrect. They assume that galaxies form gradually over billions of years. I can prove that's not true.
Well, there was a certain amount of hydrogen and helium.
Well, they knew that.
And there was a lot more hydrogen and helium all present.
Yeah, they would know that. Frank, only
where it clumped together.
Don't you think NASA would know that?
Of a star, would you have galaxies?
Yeah, Frank, don't you think NASA would know that? Is this new to them? They factor that into their prediction.
Well,
let me tell you how I could prove that the galaxies are not the 10 billion years old. Because we know, don't we know from redshift, the light, that the stars on the inside of the galaxies, you know, all those spiral galaxies?
Yep.
The stars on the inside are traveling way faster than the stars on the outside of the galaxies. And for decades, astrophysicists have known this, and it's a paradox to them because the spirals should have lost their shape many billions of years ago if the galaxies are billions of years old. But only if those galaxies are young can they have retained their spiral shape, with the inner stars traveling much faster than the outside stars.
Well, could we
– go ahead.
I guess, Bob, could I ask that we not get down to –
specific instances. All right,
and let me just give you the whole picture.
Go ahead, five and a half minutes,
and I will help prove.
You've got five and a half minutes.
Prove the Bible, and I want to preface it by saying that whether the Earth is young or whether the Earth is old, the only thing that's really important is that you have faith and trust in God, and that you have Him as your Savior, and you take Jesus as your Lord.
Well, praise the Lord, Frank. I didn't know you're a Christian. I'm thrilled to hear you say that.
So all of what I'm going to say is rather academic. I don't particularly care anymore which way it is. I don't care.
Well, the atheists care. Frank, the atheists care.
Because I'm trying to bring myself to the Lord and to the Father.
Frank,
and that's the only thing that counts.
Frank, you might not care, but the atheists care because if the Earth is young, then there must be a Creator God.
Yeah. So let me go ahead.
Five and a half minutes. Okay. We're timing.
So anyway, as these stars and galaxies formed and burned out, they produced everything that you know of, all of the elements that you know of today, from hydrogen and helium fusion. The point of it is that science has come up with 36, essentially three dozen physical constants of the universe, one of them being gravity, one of them being the strong and weak nuclear forces, and they go on and on. And they have proven that if any one of those three dozen were not almost exactly like they are today, and some of them have to be a few of them have to be more accurate than even an atomic clock in terms of what their properties are, that all we would have is helium and hydrogen or black holes, not a very useful universe for God to create humanity. So you can prove that this universe was designed and specifically tailored for there to be such a grand universe that we have. Now let's get down to the Earth.
Okay, wait, you have five more minutes to go.
So, wait.
You have 5 minutes,
okay.
But I want to make a comment on what you just said.
Yeah.
You said basically that the Big Bang and any subsequent supernovas are where all the elements were formed that are in our solar system. And when we come back from this news break, I can prove that's not true with a simple fact.
Could I continue?
Yeah. Hey, Bob Benyard here, and while our radio station affiliates are doing a news break, we here on the internet, those of you who are listening just via the internet or our archives, you might be listening to the show in 8 months from now. Right now is August 26, 2002. You might be listening next summer, 2003, and I want to tell you guys about some of our materials. We have a video called Bob Debates an Evolutionist, and it was with Dr. Eugenie Scott. Now, who's Eugenie Scott? She was on PBS, public television. did a nationwide evolution creation debate. And she was on that program. And within a couple weeks of that program, she came on my show for a one-hour debate, evolution versus creation. I wanted to talk about science. She wanted to talk about philosophy. And as far as I know, Eugenie Scott has not sold any copies of that debate, even though we offered her a beta studio quality tape of the debate. She hasn't offered any copies to her friends, but we've been selling them now like hotcakes. It's Bob Debates an Evolutionist, Dr. Eugenie Scott, physical anthropologist. So you could check that out, that video. And then we have a video called Confronting an Atheist. You know, I'm glad Frank is a believer, praise the Lord, and we have a disagreement here on how old the earth is. But we had an atheist call in, and it was from the TV show, Bob and Yurt Live, the TV show that aired in about 80 cities. And he was an atheist and wanted to know what is the evidence for God. And so what a fun video, Confronting an Atheist. And in the middle of the video, we slipped in a skit that we had done in maybe the first year of Bob and Yurt Live. We did a skit. We never did skits. But we happened to do a skit of a science teacher who died and then on Judgment Day was standing before God. And the discussion, the dialogue between the science teacher and God. Boy, that was fun. So that's Confronting an Atheist. Then we have an audio album called Genesis Creation, all about origins, evolution, the solar system. Hey, you know, Venus spins backwards. Venus spins backwards. And Isaac Newton said that if you take a cloud of gases and minerals and it's swirling and you condense it to form the sun and the planets, our solar system, Isaac Newton said, no, that theory won't fly. That wouldn't work. That was Isaac Newton. All right, we're going to go back to Frank here. And, you know, I don't think we'll take any other calls until Frank is satisfied that he's had his say. So if you're on hold, you might want to hang up. If you want to try calling in, you might risk waiting to the end of the show, if ever getting on tonight. But Frank has five more minutes, and his last point, he didn't want to answer my points point by point, so I'm answering his. This is my second answer to his second point. He said, all our elements in our solar system and the Earth were created billions of years ago when either the Big Bang— but really, scientists today say the Big Bang was 22 billion years ago. See, the universe gets a billion years older every 4 years. Every 4 years, it gets a billion years older, according to the science books. But whether it was the Big Bang or a subsequent supernova that exploded and created all the elements that formed our solar system billions of years ago, we can prove to you that that did not happen. And I'll quote a scientist at Sandia National Laboratories, Robert Gentry, who has used an electron microscope to study slivers of rock dug out of wells thousands of feet below the surface of the Earth from every continent, from all over the Earth. And when they slice them up and look at them under an electron microscope, they find countless thousands. In the world, there are billions, untold billions of halos of atomic unstable minerals that decay, specifically polonium-218. Polonium-218 has a half-life of 3 minutes. In 3 minutes, half of all the polonium is gone. So if you have 1,000 atoms of polonium, 3 minutes later you only have 500 because it's unstable. And as it breaks down, it releases radioactive energy that stains the rock around it. And even though they find polonium halo, so when it stains the rock, it makes a colored sphere, a circle that you can see with an electron microscope, and it leaves its mark. You could say, hey, there were 1,000 polonium-218 atoms here, and now they're gone, but they left their halo, their mark that they decayed. And there are billions of those in the basement rocks of the continents all over the Earth. But polonium only lasts for a few minutes. When it's created, it only lasts for a few minutes, and then it's gone. God left his fingerprint in the continents of the earth, in the crust of the earth, by showing that he created the earth and the earth's shell, the crust of the earth, he created instantaneously, not over billions of years of cooling and a billion years of the earth cooling in lava, because then there would be no polonium-218 halos, none, not billions. Okay, so let's go back to Colorado here. And Frank, you've got another 5 minutes.
Okay, so the point of it is, if you want to read further about this, the author's name is Professor Hugh Ross.
I've read Hugh Ross's books. I'm very familiar with him, and he's a Christian man.
Yep.
And he's wrong.
Well, anyway, so the point of it is that he has outlined about three dozen constants of the universe that if they weren't exactly the way they are, we'd have helium or all black holes.
Now, Frank, notice, I'll answer each point you make. You'll answer none of the points I make.
Well,
go ahead.
So anyway,
we expect that.
To me, that proves that this universe was designed
and created by God.
That's right.
So all that evidence proves my God. All that proves my point and your point. Why don't you present? No, that's not what you're here for.
Well, let me,
Frank.
Just,
we
let
do
me
that
just,
every night. You're here to provide evidence that the Earth is billions of years old.
Yeah. Okay. So
please,
minutes. Let me continue.
No, only if you're going to stick on that point. If not, say, Bob, I don't have any more on that point.
I will stick to that point.
Okay.
But let me build to it. So the point of it is that eventually, after several billion years, perhaps half of the life of the universe, our solar system starts to form with the sun, and we have all kinds of debris that are the ashes of other burnt-out stars that swirl around our Earth, and they gradually coalesce into what are known as our planets.
Okay, this is your third big point.
Yeah, and so if you look at our planet, there are also about two dozen things that have to be exactly right in order for there to be a continuum for the last 3 billion years for there to be a sustainable life form. For instance, one of them is that if Jupiter wasn't where it is, we could not have anything but bacteria, because Jupiter is close enough to us and is 100 times more massive, and the Shoemaker-Levy comet that collided into that, you know, back about 7 years ago, broke into 21 parts and had huge explosions all through there. If Jupiter wasn't there, we would have 100 times more of those, and you know the types of things that wiped out the dinosaurs and 75% of life on Earth. So if Jupiter wasn't there, you'd wipe out 75% of life 100 times more than we have. You'd just have bacteria.
But now that evidence proves your point and my point. It doesn't help prove your argument. Both our positions would agree with that. Frank, it seems like you don't have evidence.
I'm going to get to your 5 points. Just let me build to it, okay?
All right. Tell me if you're going to switch a point, because I have a rebuttal to what you had just said.
Okay. So if you will allow me, if you read the first two chapters of Genesis, and if you read those days of creation, there's 3 days of creation and 3 days of other days of let there be's and so forth. But if you look at those first two chapters, with it says, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Now, if you take the reference point of being on the surface of the waters from three billion years ago, every point there's 11 steps, if you break them down carefully, that are relative. You know, like how could there be there be stars, after the Earth was created and so forth. It's because the Earth was a primordial stew, and it was opaque. You couldn't see the stars. So when
if
you look at those in that
Frank,
context,
I'm going to put you on hold.
Go ahead.
Please acknowledge. I'm going to put you on hold.
Yep. Got it.
I'm going to respond to one of the main points you made in this last bit, and then I'll come right back to you.
Okay.
Okay. Frank said that some billions of years ago, this cloud, a swirling cloud, was condensing. It was coalescing into – it became the sun and the planets. And so that's the theory of how the solar system would form by natural law. The problem is no natural laws could create our solar system from a condensing cloud. Now, what evidence do I have of that? Well, Isaac Newton considered that theory, and Isaac Newton was – well, only the most brilliant scientist who ever lived, gave to us a general theory of gravity, explained color, what color is, light waves, and so many things. Anyway, he said that couldn't work. That Isaac Newton said that, and let me give you some arguments why it couldn't work. Because, well, Venus, now Newton didn't know this, but if the swirling cloud of gas is all, it's swirling in one direction, and then it forms the sun, which is 98% of the mass of the solar system, and then the planets. Well, the sun would have to have 98% of the swirl, the energy, the angular momentum of the swirling cloud, 98%. And listen and watch how Frank doesn't respond to these things. 98% of the swirl of the angular momentum of the cloud would be in the sun, and 2% of it would be in the planets and the moons, because we have only 2% of the mass of that original cloud. But in reality, the sun only has 2% of the turn of the angular momentum, and the planets have 98%. That would be like if there was a swirling cloud, it formed the sun, and then somebody put the brakes on the sun, stopped the sun moving, and pushed the planets, sped them up. So natural law does not explain. Also, the law of the conservation of angular momentum would say that the sun and the orbits of the planets would all be moving in the same direction, because the swirling cloud was moving in some direction. Whatever direction the cloud was going, that's the direction of all the orbits and the planets. Well, Venus is rotating backwards. A couple of the moons are a bit out of whack. That wouldn't happen. Also, Jupiter has four moons discovered and named by Galileo. And those moons, the outer of the four big moons, the outermost goes around once, while the one just inside of that goes around twice, and the one just inside of that goes around four times, and the one just inside of that goes around eight times. And then we have other planets where it's two moons. One will go around twice, while the other goes around exactly three times. And we got a planet where the inner and outer moons, as they pass orbits, they switch places. All of this like a perfect Swiss watch, and no law of physics would predict or can explain these incredible intricacies that show us that God specially designed the solar system, that it did not form by natural processes. Let's go to Frank and his 4 minutes.
Okay, so this swirling cloud, nobody says how much of it is hydrogen and helium versus how much are elements that we're familiar with, you know, that you can feel and touch and we're made of and your cars are made of and so forth like that.
Yeah.
Nobody really knows, you know, how much was hydrogen and helium. The point of it is that the hydrogen and the helium, being the lightest, would go to the would go.
All right.
To the,
hold on. We'll be right back. Center. All right. Hold on. We'll be right back. Okay, hey, live commercial break. Frank, just to let you know, we're in a commercial break, but our breaks are – we're on a hard clock. So our affiliates can go to their commercial breaks just at the right time. So when we come back, you've got your – I didn't take off any time. You've got your full remaining 4 minutes. Hey, Bob and Art Live, our order line number is 1-888-836-9278. We here at Bob and Art Live, we present – the conservative Christian arguments for the validity of the Bible, the theology of the Bible, the principles of governance in the Bible, the criminal justice ideas that God has given us in the Bible, the rules for family life that God has given us in the Bible, how a church should function according to the Bible. That's what we defend here at Bob and Yurt Live. How do you have good marriages? How do you have healthy lives? How do you live a full life on earth and not look back and say it was a loss? How do you do that? Well, it's good to read the owner's manual, the manufacturer's manual, the Bible. And at Denver Bible Church. That's why we call it Denver Bible Church. We teach the Bible. Bob and Eric live on the radio, on the internet. We've been doing this for 10 years. We teach the Bible, and hey, we would love to have you help us do this. We're not independently funded. Our airtime, our monthly airtime bill, oh boy, has it gone up. It's just exploded recently. And because of the better airtime we've been purchasing, better time slots, stronger stations than we had for a long time. And so we're reaching out to more and more people, but we need the help of you and those people in order to continue. So if you enjoy what we're doing, if you believe in the message of the Bible and you think we're doing a good job, that we're good stewards of teaching the Bible and using all the different disciplines that men use, whether it's history or linguistics, archaeology, science, theology, whatever it is, even sociology and the study of, say, criminal behavior and sexual immorality, bringing evidence from all spheres of life together to defend the gospel of Jesus Christ. If you like what we're doing, help us. We need your help. All right, we're back. Bob and Yart live, 1-800-836-9278, 1-800-8-NYART. You know, almost all the debates we've had for 10 years on scientific topics, they sort of all go this way, whether it's somebody arguing for evolution or arguing that the Earth is billions of years old. I like to speak in general terms, never respond to any of the specific arguments we give, which makes us think that our arguments are extremely powerful because they're virtually irrefutable. And they speak in general terms, often on things that are true regardless of which position you take. So Frank has 4 minutes. We'll go back to him. And Frank, I do thank you for joining us.
Surely. I first of all would like to preface it by saying that your previous commentary is probably more than 1,000 times more important than a trivial argument of how old the Earth is. This is just something that I, as a research scientist, was able to prove to myself that there was a God, and so now I'm working on building my faith and trust and
good
love and so forth, and that's my main.
Well, that is
my
great
main thrust right now.
Yeah.
So what I'm talking about is kind of trivial, but
right, it's not right. It's not very important to you, but to the atheist, it is.
Well, have them read Hugh Ross's book, Creation and Time.
Well,
and then
well,
from that,
I don't want to confuse
the
them.
Ones.
I don't want them to start thinking things that are not true.
He lays it out in detail.
Yeah, but he's wrong. If you read that book, and I read that book,
yep,
if it was a good book, you'd be able to whip off rebuttals to anything I say, and I wouldn't be able to refute you if it was a good book.
Right.
But it's a terrible book because it's almost completely wrong.
He doesn't focus on the nuances of whether one planet spins in a reverse way. By the way, this...
That's a rather convenient omission, don't you think?
Well, I don't know, but one of the points is that this cloud that formed was not a perfect platter, you know. It had a lot of
lumps,
wobbles to it. And so
yeah. Why do you think Isaac Newton would say that cannot happen?
Well, because he was born hundreds of years before some of the very latest relativity and some of the very latest atomic particle.
Relativity doesn't help you form the solar system from
yes,
a cloud.
They can prove all of the physical reactions within 10 to the minus 32nd.
Does
10 to the minus 37th.
That's called obfuscation, Frank. That's irrelevant. Relativity say that the law of angular momentum is false?
Let me just say what really is important.
All right.
What really is important in this trivial domain that we're debating here is that there are 24, about two dozen physical constants of the Earth that has made it so that it has had a habitable environment for 3 billion years.
All right, that's true for both theories,
yeah,
Frank.
And so
okay, hey, Frank, I'm going to interrupt you now because we're going to run out of time. Can I just finish up with your five questions? You can't. Yeah, we'll go to my five questions. But, Frank, you spent most of your time saying things that young Earth and old Earth people agree with. In the few old Earth arguments you made, I gave specific rebuttals to you, and you didn't address any of them because you couldn't.
Well, there's
because the evidence is against you.
There's 10,000 things that you could come out with that
well, everything
that,
you that, happened that, to come out with, I had a strong, concrete, specific rebuttal to everything you came up with. Why couldn't you rebut my points?
Because I have never had the time to investigate the million things.
You're a geophysical research scientist.
I was a research scientist.
You read a book on the topic recently.
In seismic exploration.
I'm the pastor at Denver Bible Church.
Yeah.
I never been on an exploration.
Yeah. So anyway, the point is there's 24 constants that have to be exactly right for the Earth to be like it is.
All right, let me give you my five points.
God has to have it. Another extremely important one is that all of life has the same RNA, DNA, and certain proteins.
That has nothing to do with the topic.
From moss.
All right. Hey, Frank, I'm going to have to hang up on you unless you address my point number one was we have 4 billion years of missing lava on the surface of the Earth.
Let me answer that one.
Where is it hiding?
The point of it is that there – have you heard of subduction?
Subduction couldn't possibly remove even 5% of that great quantity.
Subduction doesn't
remove 90% of the surface of the Earth every billion years.
This whole planet has
okay, that answer was wrong. Let's go to the next one.
This whole Earth has been churned like a – you went through it with a Mixmaster. Australia has been – totally around the whole Earth 8 times in its existence.
Hey Frank, I suggest to you that you read a science book by a brilliant scientist named Walter Brown, Dr. Walt Brown, called In the Beginning, and you'll learn a lot about subduction and the ocean floors. But so no scientist in the world would say, no geologist would say that subduction could remove 4 billion years of lava from the surface of the Earth. How about all the nickel from meteorites falling on Siberia in the last billion years?
It's all in the core. When it all
the most dense part
went to the core.
How about the stuff that's landed? The Earth is 5 billion years old. It hardened in the first 1 billion years.
Yep.
So just the nickel that's landed in the last 4 billion years, just that's landed, say, in Siberia. It hasn't had time to get to the ocean floor yet.
They find it all over. I've got a piece that weighs 20 pounds right on my speaker.
I know. The meteorites are filled with nickel, but the point is there's 4 billion years of missing meteorites. Siberia, North America, every continent, Antarctica should be peppered with billions of years of meteorites so that we should have thick nickel everywhere on the planet.
No, because
– the ocean should be filled with nickel content.
The thing that I don't think you grasp, Bob, is that this whole – the whole surface of the Earth, the whole thing has
been – Hey, Frank, I responded to your subduction argument.
The last three, Frank, it's not dissolved in the oceans. They're all buried deep inside the Earth now.
How about the last 100 million years? How about since the dinosaurs? All the nickel that landed in the meteorites is all buried by subduction at the bottom of the oceans?
It's been pretty much used up. There's not that many.
You don't use up nickel.
No, what I'm saying is there's not that many meteorites left in our solar system.
And the rate of meteorites landing on the Earth would have been way higher billions of years ago than it is today because, like you just said, the solar system is being cleaned out by the sun so that there's less debris. But at the current rate of meteorites falling on the Earth, at the current rate, and it would have been much higher in the past, there's billion years of missing nickel. Okay, how about all the missing sediments on the ocean floor?
Let me tell you where the nickel is. You just did it twice. Where you and I live. Right now in Colorado used to be an ocean.
Yeah.
The ocean used to be there.
By the way, it's not true. There was typically a flood that covered our land for a short time. But hey, Frank,
there's typically about 20,000 feet of sediment that has formed on the Earth, and so that nickel and so forth is in the top 20,000 feet.
It's not. It's not there. Nickel is a rare element throughout the crust of the Earth. Something a pastor, Denver Bible Church, knows, but if you were to scoop off a
thousand feet down.
Okay, real quick. No, you're wrong. You don't find it, Frank. Okay, how about the sediments on the ocean floor? 4-5 billion years of missing sediments on the ocean floors.
They didn't used to be an ocean until maybe a few million years ago.
Oh, a few million years ago. Okay, how about a billion years of missing minerals in the oceans?
They were up as a landmass.
How about 100 million years of missing minerals in the ocean? Surely they've been there for 100 million years since the dinosaurs.
Missing minerals in the ocean. The minerals in the ocean have fallen on the floor of the ocean.
They're not there either. How about the Earth's magnetic field weakening over the last 200 years? We've been measuring it.
Oh, that's a given. That's a.
No, it's not. When I mentioned it earlier, you confused the audience by bringing up reversals. I'm not talking about a magnet reversing its polarization. I'm talking about the magnetic field of the Earth weakening so that if you reversed that, it would become as strong as a magnetic star in about a million years.
If you drill 20,000 feet into the sediment, if you drill through 20,000 feet of sediment, and you look at all of those zones that have had all of those intervals wherever you find something that has been molten, that has been a molten metal.
1 minute.
You will find all of these reversals.
Frank, why are you talking about reversals, when I'm talking about the strength of the magnetic field?
What I'm saying is, in order to have a reversal, you got to, of course, have many different changes in strength.
No, that's not true. If you have a magnet and the polarization flips on the magnet, so the positive side's negative and the negative side's positive, the magnet doesn't get stronger. The polarization flipped because the electrons switched. Your electric current started running the opposite direction.
Well, Bob, let me sum it up. Let me have 30 seconds on one other thing. God had to give us the building blocks of life because everything alive, moss to humans, are made out of the same RNA, DNA, and proteins. And it's just how you make the little combinations of those four little characters.
Amen.
Whether it's a dinosaur or you or me or moss.
Amen.
And for those three things to have formed simultaneously, as complex as they are, is physically absolutely impossible. God gave them to us. And I personally believe that what God gave us was the building blocks of Earth, of life, and that he has guided that building towards the human and towards a human mind and a soul that can comprehend the spirit that he put in us.
Well, that's neat. I agree with that. Hey, Frank, have you heard of
–
Frank, we're out of time. Have you heard of the Creation Research Society?
Nope.
CRS?
Nope.
Why don't you go on the web and check them out? 600 advanced degreed scientists who are creationists.
Are we off the air now?
No, that's the ending music. We're about off the air. And have you heard of Answers in Genesis with Ken Ham?
No.
That's a great source to get good information.
Have your readers read Hugh Ross.
Hey, Frank, Hugh Ross is wrong. I just debated a Hugh Ross fan who's a geological research scientist, and I just whomped on him. Frank, you got your clock cleaned because of this, not because I'm smarter than you. You're a scientist. You read a book recently, but that whole argument is wrong.
I've read all of his books. He's got about six of them.
Frank, the atheists desperately want the world to be billions of years old so that they can hope in absurdity. But if God created the Earth just 6,000 years ago, the atheists have nowhere to hide.
If the atheists looked at what has been precisely orchestrated in the universe on our Earth, in giving us the building blocks of life,
because we tell them the Earth is billions of years old, they think they can hide. But under the light of the truth, of science, and God's word, there's nowhere to hide. This is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.